Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Mary Elizabeth Bradford, and I'm very excited about today's Career Power Strategy Sessions call. Welcome, everybody. The title of today's call is The Secrets to Interviewing and Negotiating. And I am very excited about this call because so many of my clients over the years have managed to secure significantly more offers, more money, and just better quality positions, even have positions made for them, by understanding to a little bit greater degree the psychology behind interviewing, how to answer tough questions, how to answer some behavioral-based questions, and how to talk about money. And so I'm going to go over the key points to a lot of these things and just interviews in general, the general construct of things that you want to see happen in each and every interview and why you want to see them happen. And hopefully at the end of this, you will be much better prepared for any interview, whether you are a senior C-level executive. You can apply these techniques and strategies absolutely to your interviews, or whether you are more of a junior level or mid-manager or VP. Even an entry level. This is, you know, something that is not only evergreen, but is really a lot of just basic, you know, kind of common sense principles that applied across the board can just help with bettering communication, creating more of a bond, and getting to the, you know, the end result faster. So we're going to cover several different things, the reason people get passed over for offers, the psychology behind interviewing, how to establish a connection, some interview disqualifiers to avoid, some things that you have to ask in every interview in the beginning and in the end, and how to answer tough interview questions, and then some techniques on how to discuss money. So I'm going to jump right into it because I'm squeezing about a two hours worth of information into under 60 minutes. Okay, so here we go. So the number one reason why people get passed over for offers, you know, I'm sure there's more than one reason, but at the end of the day, it's because the individuals didn't build the value of who they could be to that particular company. It's really important to understand. When I write a resume, I am figuring out what the end game is for each of you as a client, if you are a client of mine, and then I'm working backwards. When I have a goal for my business, I figure out what the end game is, and then I work backwards to figure out what steps I have to take to make that happen. So just like any type of typical project management, when we're in an interview, we figure out what that we're in there for and what that company wants, and we work backwards from there. In other words, we connect all of our things that we do that it aligns with what they need together, and that's how we build the value of who we can be to them. And there's other things too, but that's the primary thing to remember. And just case in point, I've done a lot of lower-level interviewing for entry-level type positions for admin and different type of, editing and things that I need assistance with. And it really is baffling how I can put out a sort of job, you know, request or job requirement, whether it's through my association job board or even on Craigslist, and get back just a whole variety of information that has nothing to do with what I've written, you know, but the person will say something like, oh, I don't know, I'm a hard worker, I'm a team player, haven't really told me anything that I need to know to give me the call to action to then respond to them in kind. And to me, if somebody emails me and they email something that isn't really relevant to what I've asked for, why should I bother to follow up with an interview? Because it ends where it begins. So, I mean, unless I want to, abuse myself or something, there's no reason for me to go down that road. I'm going to pick the person that looks like they're paying attention. This happens at all levels. And, of course, I've been interviewing, helping people prepare for interview, interviews, coaching executives how to go into the interview, and debriefing as a recruiter after the interview for 17 years. So I've done this for all different industries, different types of positions, for the company and for clients, or the job seeker themselves, I should say. And so I have a fairly solid perspective, and some running themes have sort of bubbled up to the surface after years of doing this I'm going to be revealing to you today. Interviewing in general, I think most people that I speak with think that they interview pretty well. Interestingly enough, it said to me over and over again, just get me into the interview and I'll do the rest. And not everybody feels that way, of course, but I think there's a large amount of people that feel that way. And I think they feel that way because they like what they do, and or they feel that just being themselves will sell the interviewer on them. Or they feel that because they answer all the questions right or correctly, or just answer all the questions, period, in an interview, that is the definition of a good interview, which couldn't be farther from the truth, because that's an interrogation, not an interview. So let me just bounce back up here to the psychology of interviewing and how to establish an instant connection with your interviewers. Just overall communication strategies to deepen the bond are really important in an interview, because an interrogation where you're just answering somebody's question doesn't really do anything to strengthen the trust, to engender any type of bonding between two people. And so a few basic things that we always want to remember to do in an interview are smile. Don't shake hands too hard or too soft. And I know that is sort of boilerplate type information, but, you know, I shake hands with a lot of different people, and it is really amazing how many women will grip my hand as though we were doing some Krav Maga or whatever you call that. I mean, I don't know what anyone's trying to prove with that. Like, stop. men that shake hands or turn my hand down so their hand's on top, all this stuff is just completely out of line. So no one should ever be doing that. I don't care who you are, whether you're powerful, you're a good old boy, you're the president of a company. A good leader is someone that is also a good mentor. If I've learned anything, that much I've learned. And they shake people's hand, no matter who they are, what their station in life is, with respect. Not too firmly, not, you know, wimply, or, you know, with a big sweaty palm, not, you know, too soft, just right in the middle, look them in the eye. You don't have to grab their arm or anything like that, unless, of course, you know them and you have a affection for them or something. But other than that, you know, just be normal. So another thing that you can do as you're trying to establish basic, connections is you can look around at something in their office or maybe something you've read about them recently and compliment them one time on something that you authentically admire at the beginning of the interview. Never in any interview react in a negative way or become defensive. You know, this can be a problem if someone's been in a long job interview, if they're over 55 and they're feeling like maybe there's been some age discrimination, if they got fired from their last job or laid off and they are job searching what I would call prematurely, and still the pain of that situation is still, they're still wearing that. And this happens all the time. These are not... unfortunately, these are not, the exceptional situations. I run into this continuously. And I don't just run into it with people that don't know what they're doing. With successful, brilliant, wonderful people that are just making mistakes that are costing them additional interviews. So if you're going to take the time to invest in going on an interview, let's make sure that we've got a few of these things, in line. Another pitfall in terms of becoming defensive or just blurting things out happens with my engineer clients. And no offense to, I have lots and lots of scientists and engineers and people like this that I work with. They're more type A. They're not thinking about diplomacy. And that a lot of them are very extreme. They just blurt, you know, my horse trainer just blurts things out. And he doesn't really, the last thing he's thinking about are your feelings. And some people are just like that. And that's okay. I would never do that, but that's because I'm just like that. So I don't fault someone for not being like me. At the same time, it's important to exercise a certain amount of diplomacy in order that you don't offend someone unnecessarily or create an impression that isn't really true, or talk yourself out of a second or third interview. So just to remember, you know, if somebody says something and it's off-putting, some good neutralizers are, I understand, or wow, that's interesting, you know, and smile. They don't have to, you know, be privy to all of your inner feelings or knowing what you really think about something. I mean, you have to remember that the two things that you're trying to make happen in an interview is you are trying to figure out exactly what they need, and you are trying to get the biggest offer possible. And I'll get into a little bit more of that in a minute. But that is really what you're trying to achieve. And in order to achieve that, certain things have to happen. You can, you know, go in prepared, knowing what you will or won't do in order to accelerate those ultimate outcomes. So don't react in a negative way or become defensive, no matter what they say. Answer questions, but if you are looking to, let's say, for example, you don't have a natural connection with the person you're interviewing with, or what if it's a panel, it's more formal, then you're going to have to try a little harder. If you don't naturally maybe like the person, or you don't have a natural, oh, we really hit it off, you know, with the person sitting across from you. Well, you can answer their questions, but maybe every third or fourth question, ask your own. So perhaps they ask you a question, and you answer, and you say, gosh, since we're on the subject, how does that fit in with what you're looking for? Or since you brought it up, can you share more about that with me? So you're answering their question, you're satisfying them, and then you're going to follow up with a question of your own. And that back and forth does create a bond. It creates a bond. It interrupts the cadence, creates a more natural flow. You know, if the cadence is really, structured where they're just firing questions at you and you're answering, you know, and so that will help break that up. So the top interview disqualifiers to avoid. Again, failure to build the value of who you can be to that company, which really equates to not listening. So when you go into every one of your interviews, I like to think of it as a consultant. When somebody calls me on the phone and they want a resume or they are looking into my services, the very first thing I do is ask them about themselves. I want to know, why are you calling me? What is it that you think I can help you with? Tell me about what you'd like to see happen in the next, 30 days or 60 days. And is there anything about that that might be concerning to you? What are your concerns? And then I speak to their needs. I, like a consultant, I'm trying to piece together the products and services I have that can help that client or that potential client. And when I'm doing that, I'm not thinking about money. I'm not thinking about, is this, can I sell this person? It's, and I've never done that, and I'm not saying that that's bad or wrong. I'm just saying that for me personally, I truly want to help that individual, and so I want that information that I'm expressing to them to come across very purely, even if it involves being objective in my delivery and saying, you might try this and you might try that, and maybe it doesn't involve you and I working together, really depending on what that person needs. And so having that approach where you're really listening to what it is that company is wanting And then speaking to those needs, if you enjoy what you do and you're a solution type person, or you know what you do really well, this should be very easy for you to do. So put on the consultant's hat, talk to them about what it is they need, and try to stay in those talking points so that you continue to build the value of who you can be to them. The other interview disqualifier is not taking a leadership role in the interview, letting it be an interrogation, getting defensive at any point in the interview. So all the things that I just previously went over are all the things to avoid. It's important to remember in a job search that it is a very, very valuable thing to understand what you can control in your job search and to understand what is out of your control. Because you can let go of the things that are outside of your control, and you can fine-tune the things that are in your control. And that makes for a much easier job search, because you're not really worried about the unknowns or the things that are outside of your realm of ability to wield, you know. But you can certainly control many things in your job search, and one of them is to communicate the value that you bring to the table, because value always trumps any liabilities. I've seen a lot of things happen over the years with different interview situations, and I can tell you that I've had clients get $50,000 raises after being fired from their last company, and ugly firings where they thought maybe it was going to hurt their reputation, or somebody changes industries and moves across state and gets a $30,000 raise, or somebody's been sending out resumes for 6 months and doesn't hear a peep out of anyone, and then, you know, once we help them, they start getting interviews and offers immediately. These things aren't imaginary. They're things that can happen that are very real, and that are based on just common sense principles of improving your marketing collateral and improving the way that you communicate your value and you do and say things when you're out there talking to potential companies. And really, it's a lot. It's almost exactly the same as what I would do or another small business owner would do when talking to a, you know, a potential client. So value trumps liabilities, and how do those people get those gigantic pay raises and job offers coming out of the woodwork? By selling their value, by understanding that talking about the results that they can achieve, how that helps the people that they're speaking with form a better opinion about them, create intrigue, create want and need, and everything else is minimized. You know, it's like my late friend Mark Holbein used to say, I turn lead into gold, but I have a third grade education, and I get up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon every day, and I'm bald, and I'm not very attractive, and I'm very overweight, and I'm 95 years old. Would you like to hire me? I turn lead into gold. So his point there obviously was to focus on the value, because whether we like it or not, when someone first looks at our resume, where we first call someone on the phone, when they first look at our LinkedIn profile, they are thinking probably one of two things. What good are you? And or why should I be reading this? And so we have to answer that. And because we're talking about our career, it's usually going to translate into something that has to do with you making or saving somebody money. Now, getting a little deeper into this particular subject, unless we're a CEO or in some kind of a C-level position, we're not really encouraged and or trained to think about the results that we bring to the table, which is why when most people send me resumes, it's very task-driven. Most of those resumes focus on the tasks. And the very first thing that I usually am speaking about to them is, let's finish the story out. You've said that you do X, Y, and Z, and you're on the board that runs the thing, that da-da-da-da. Okay, and then there's a period. Well, what happened when you did that? Oh, well, we managed to, you know, do thus and so. Great. Well, where is that? Oh, well, okay. And so And so what we want to do is finish the story. We lead with the result. So a lot of this ties into your resume and how good your resume is. But one of the things that I teach my clients is to front load your accomplishments. So let's say you ran a project that ended up making the company $10 million. I'm not going to say, as one of your bullets, I did thus and so, and then I put this program into place, and then I led the project that eventually ended up 36 months later in increasing revenue $10 million for the North American territory. I am going to say, drove revenue $10 million in under 36 months. So when you read that, you go, oh, that's interesting. How'd she do that? By doing, and then I'm going to very briefly and very tightly create some type of a one or two sentence or maybe a few, couple short bullet points to explain what it is that you did. Now, this same achievement, maybe it has a little chart or graph on the side of it. Now, this is a talking point in an interview. So one thing that you can do in your interviews is, let's say, for example, you're in for, let's say, a senior project management interview. Look at your resume and think about the top three to five, because that's a manageable number, and that's probably all you're going to get to talk about in an interview anyway. So fortunately, that's all you need. 3 to 5 stories that are metric-driven, that have quantifiable accomplishments, that are at least approximately quantifiable. So if you don't know whether it's $1 million or $1.2 million, don't worry, because you're really just trying to give your reader some kind of a semblance of perspective of the size and scope of the things that you've led and that you've worked on, and that, you know, it's not a legal document, essentially. But you want to go ahead and create those bullets and decide, you know, okay, these are my top three accomplishments, and this is what I'm going to take a deeper dive with when I go into my my interviews. So those are your talking points for the interview. And if it's a project management driven role, then you probably want to talk about your project management expertise. If it's more of a director role, then maybe you want to take a step back and talk about more of your strategic initiatives that you have led. So you choose and you match them up with the jobs and just do a few minutes of preparation to try to think about the accomplishments that you're going to cite that really makes that argument for you being in whatever position that you're interviewing for. Okay, so value always trumps liabilities, real or imagined. Very, very important to remember, because that's really based on what I've seen, not what I believe or some theory, but what I've seen my clients do over and over again. If somebody thinks you can make or save them the money, they're willing to overlook a heck of a lot of stuff, to put it bluntly. So the number one thing that you need to ask in every phone and in-person interview is, well, there's two things. At the beginning of the interview, you need to find out what they're looking for. At the end of the interview, you need to figure out where you all go from there. So I'll start at the beginning. Maybe you sit down and they ask you, so tell me about yourself. And then you start with your tell me about yourself, and I'll get into that in a second. But when you're done, then you're going to follow with, and I'm really excited to be here today and learn more about this position and the type of person that you're looking for. Can we talk about that now, if you don't mind, please? Or you're going to sit down and they're going to look at you and say, so how would you like to start? And you're going to say, I would love to start by finding out more about this position and the type of person that you're looking for. Now, you may have a job description, maybe a recruiter debriefed you. That's fine, but I guarantee you there's going to be elements of surprise based on what you've read or heard and what they tell you, especially if it's more than one person. Sometimes the job is completely different. Sometimes it's just a little bit different. Sometimes two or three people will be sitting there and they'll say two or three different things. So because of this, you want to ask, and then you want to take down talking points, and those are your jotting down notes, and those are your notes for the rest of the interview. Those are your talking points. That's where you've got to stay. You can talk about other things later, but you have to build the value of who you can be to them. because remember, the end game is that we want to get the job offer and we want to get the best job offer possible, because there's nothing bad about getting job offers. You can use it in other interview situations. You can it will make you feel better. It will excite you. Even if it's not exactly the position you want, it will make you feel more empowered. It might be your dream job. So, in other words, put the same amount of effort into every single interview you have, even though one's going to be more exciting to you than the other. At the end of the interview, the question that you have to ask when they say, "Do you have any more questions for us?" You probably want to have two or three, not seven or 20, but two, maybe three. One of the ones that I like a lot is, you know, let's say, for example, if you don't mind indulging me, let's say you've hired me, we're together for 6 months, now we're in a performance interview, I've exceeded your expectations. What did I do to make you feel that way? And the way that you are presenting that question usually makes people flip out. Like, oh, my God, that's such a great question. And then they'll end up giving you information that maybe they even haven't spoken about for the entire interview. So it's kind of fun to couch it that way and see what they say. And most interviewers like that. But the key question that you have to ask before you go is, where do we go from here? I have too many times had to coach ever a frustrated client or someone that was a potential client saying they'd been on all these interviews and everything went great, or so they thought, and 3 weeks later they still hadn't heard anything, or the guy never called them back and they're so upset. And the angst, I mean, the frustration, it's unprecedented. People really get upset. I don't know if you've ever had that happen to you, but you know, there's an excitement that builds when you're interviewing, and when that plateaus and then you're just left dangling, it's kind of like a marriage proposal you never get a answer on. It's very disheartening. And the way that I see it is, you got enough things that happen in the career transition environment that are going to test you mentally, physically, emotionally. You don't need to put extra things that can be avoided on yourself and make it harder than it has to be. So with a little planning, you can hedge against some of these frustrations that may happen and really lessen the frustration of the job search in general and the communication, you know, errors that sometimes come up because we get so excited we don't ask the questions that we need to ask. So, where do we go from here? And if they say, well, I'll just play this out. Well, we've got to interview 16 other people, and we're probably going to know something in the next 30 days. We're going to try to make a decision. Okay, so at the end of August, I can ring you if I haven't heard before. Yes, you can do that. Great. Okay, now you've got a date. You know what you're going to do. You've gotten their approval to do it. This is going to help you sleep so much better at night. So that's really all it is. You're just trying to understand. If I don't hear from you by next Wednesday, then is it okay if I follow up with a phone call? Well, no, we'll call you. Okay, well, good. Well, now you know they don't want to be called. And then that's just another little piece of information you have about them and that company that you can use to make your own decision about what you want to do moving forward. So, okay. Let's talk about the team A. Oh, I wanted to tell you a story before I continue about the offer. When I talk about getting the best offer possible, even if you don't think you want the job, I learned this, but I'll give you two examples of some things I've learned over the years. Recruiter story, years ago when I was a recruiter, I got a job order from my top commercial construction company, and I won't name them, but they were a top commercial big contractor. They still are. And they said, the president of the company was telling me what he needs, and basically it was for like a senior project manager for healthcare, and the position would pay between $100,000 and $150,000. I brought in a perfect guy, big chip on his shoulder, but perfect guy, and I didn't coach him well enough. and they ended up offering him $125. And when they made me the offer to give to him, the president ended the phone call by asking me if I really felt like this guy wanted the job. Now, he had already interviewed twice, and I remember that statement settling in with me, you know, for a day or two. And I thought, my God, you know, he really, what it equated to for me was I knew that, and I felt like it was my fault. I could have coached him more, but that man left $25,000 on the table because the company was so excited about him. And so his response to that, which I was a little bit too green to solve or fix at the time or approach him on, was to kind of sit back and start making demands, get a little too comfortable. So we really want to always be engaging with the company, no matter whether they're doing backflips, saying you're perfect, everything's great. You want to respond in kind. It's like a dance, you know. Oh, you're perfect too, and I love you too, and everything's going to be great. You really just want to keep building, keep feeding back that energy to them like a loop, a feedback loop. And don't just take it and go, ha-ha, they want me. Because I guarantee you all of us are, you know, replaceable. And it's great that they want you, and that is your cue to just keep building the value of who you can be to them, and don't leave money on the table. And I'll get more into money here also in a second. So just remember, if the recruiter's wooing you, if the company's wooing you, don't get comfortable, don't start making demands, be excited to sell your value. Another story I had is a man that I worked with a few years ago. This was for a big, big engineering firm that built these, I don't know, offshore platforms in the ocean for oil and gas exploration, I think. But anyway, it was a big job. And this man was from Houston. He didn't really want the job, though. And I kept telling him, okay, you don't want it, but play it out and let's see how it goes. Don't, you know, just hold your cards close to your chest. Convey your excitement, sell your value. He did. He got the offer. It was a lowball offer. And I showed him how to, which just made him even more, you know, soured on the position. But he was smart. He said, thank you very much. I'm really excited. And then we talked afterwards. I told him how to counter that offer. He ended up getting $30,000 more. He was delighted with the offer and took it and was really happy. Got a promotion. So everything ended up working out. So I guess the point is, sometimes we think things are one way, but sometimes that can change. and there's different things that we can control to make that outcome better. There was a third man. I'll tell you this story too. He was looking for a position. He wanted to move to Illinois, very specific city in Illinois. He lived in California with his family. He had a sort of a long-range goal to work for a big splashy company that when you said the name, everyone would know it. That was his thing. He's like, I want to work for a Gold's Gym or a, you know, some big national name brand, something or other, or a Sprint or a Hertz. I said, all right. So I laid out a strategy. He was very smart. He took initiative. He played it out. He ended up getting an informational interview with one of the big telecom companies. But the interview was in Washington State, and he asked me what he thought I should do, and I said, don't tell him that anything about Illinois. Go up there, and, well, he had the informational interview turn into an actual interview because they really liked him. So I said, just go up there, don't tell me anything yet, get him to really fall in love with you, and then, you know, and then see what happens. He did it. They did. They fell in love with him. It got to the point where, you know, he had to reveal what he wanted. He said, well, honestly, I would ultimately like to be in Illinois, and he named the town. And they said, well, my goodness, we have regional director positions all over. That is no problem at all. So he got within like 15 or 20 miles, at the end of the day, and that was for an interview that was up in Washington State. And he got a 23 or 33, I can't remember, $1,000 raise, and they paid for his MBA, and now he's a senior vice president for a very large company. And he comes back every couple of years, but I guess the point is that we've got to keep it open, and so you don't want to tell someone, it's a fine line, you don't want to tell someone I'm open, But at the same, you know, I'm open, like, you know, here's my credentials. Where do you see me fitting in? You want to go in with a little bit more leadership directive, but at the same time, when it comes to your demands, things about the offer, the ultimate outcome, it is better to just keep your cards a little bit close to your chest and reveal things when you really feel like you've got them to the point where they just are not going to be able to live and breathe without you. They just have to have you on their team. So, there's another story I had too. Should I tell that? No, I don't have time. Okay, I'll keep going. Okay, I want to go over some interview questions. Tell me about yourself. I told you that I would go over that. So, first of all, to prepare, we can, you know, there's enough information online now for most companies to really do a little bit of research and feel pretty prepared. You can use Google News Alerts and you know, track a company that you're trying to prepare for an interview for and get all kinds of real-time information now very, very quickly and easily. But the thing I think that really deserves the best preparation is what you're going to do to make that interview successful beyond knowing things about them, which might sound a little counterintuitive, but you'll just have to trust me on this. So first of all, 5 stories with metrics, 3 to 5 success stories with quantifiable achievements, and then a little bit of preparation on the tell me about yourself is a good one to prepare. Keep it under a minute, and I'm going to provide you with a sample script that you can fill in the blanks, but basically it would go something like this. Well, as you can see from my resume, I have, and I'll make something up, 20 years of experience in the telecom industry. I graduated from Baylor with a degree and da-da-da. My first few positions were in this and this and this, and that's where I really built my foundation in consumer, in telecommunications. And then I was recruited by ABC Company, and I was subsequently promoted. And a couple of my proudest accomplishments in that 10-year run was this and this. And then I was recently promoted to blank. And my, again, making this up, my company reorganized overseas. And so now, you know, I am here, and I'm very excited to be here today and learn more about what you're looking for. Can we talk about that now? So that's an example of how that tell me about yourself story might go, and I've again provided you with kind of a fill in the blanks to help you create yours. So let's quickly go over a few basic interview questions because I think this is important. What are your strengths? A good answer to that is just to name 3 of your strengths and then give an example of the one that you feel aligns best with the position that you're in there interviewing for. So that's self-explanatory. What are your weaknesses? Again, you're looking for something benign that really is not going to pigeonhole you or open up a can of worms. So maybe something like, I set high standards for myself and I expect that from others. But, you know, not everyone I've worked with over the years shares those standards, and that can be frustrating. So I've worked on giving those on my team that need a little extra mentoring that time and effort. And, you know, really I've found that that most everyone will try to rise to a higher potential. So most people that are high performers, that story is true for them in part or entirely, and so you can come up with an example of maybe how you helped someone, how you mentored someone, and in leadership positions, you know, part of the leadership snapshot that most companies are looking for is someone that can make decisions, that's charismatic, that can mentor, that people like, that can sort of engender trust and kind of rally the troops across different departments, that has a strategic ability to create strategies and then form a team and sort of lead and play those out. Okay, so think, you know, the call to action there would be just see if you can remember a story that you can use as an example to give a descriptor there. Now, trick questions. Trick questions, whether it be something like how do you handle stress or what don't you like about your job or your boss or how many marbles are in this barrel or, you know, anything weird, really those questions are primarily asked to see how you'll respond. So this is one of those areas where you don't want to get defensive. You want to diffuse with, I understand, and you want to keep your answer short so you don't over-talk and open up a can of worms in the process. Besides, when you answer a trick question then move on, you're really encouraging the interviewer and the interview to for the time to be invested in you, again, building the value with the stories of who you can be to them, talking about their challenges, talking about what they need, and that's going to make a stronger and better impression on them. And so really, that's why, one of the reasons why it's valuable to divert, you know, your answers, keep your answers, not divert your answers, but keep your answers short and sweet and then move on to something else. So here's some short answers. How do you handle stress? Very well. Very well. And then if they look like they need more, you can say something like, well, I plan my work and work my plan, and I find that that alleviates a lot of stress, or, you know, I exercise, I try to keep a work-life balance. Where do you want to be in 3 to 5 years? Again, depending on what you know or don't know about the position, that could be a trick question. So a good answer is, well, I expect to be advancing based on my job performance and taking on additional responsibilities. I expect to be advancing based on my performance and hopefully taking on responsibilities. That would be nice if I was compensated appropriately for that, of course. And I, since we're on the subject, could you share with me what your goals are with the company for the next few years? So that's an example of how you can turn it around and then ask them a question. So what don't you like about your job or your boss, or what was the worst boss you had and why? Very tempting to do character assassinations. I had one boss that made me her special science project. I felt so abused. The woman was crazy. But you can't bring that up in a job interview. And primarily not because it's not true or it won't go over well, but because in most cases the interviewers don't know us well enough to know, you know, if we're telling the truth or not, or what the other side of the story was. So rather than put a question mark in their mind, it's best to just avoid the whole thing altogether and just, you know, say something like something benign again. Well, the worst boss I ever had, he wasn't really a bad boss. I mean, we were actually friends, but he was very technology averse, and he always blocked my efforts to integrate new systems into our department that really would have saved us a lot of money. So every time I had to integrate something, it turned into, you know, a really difficult, long discussion. It took longer. It was more tense. And eventually, I did manage to move forward with 2 big initiatives that saved us $6 million, but to get there was a long road. You know, that's fairly benign. I mean, and that shows you as a good person. So try to think of a story like that that's true for you that you can use. Or you could say something like, you know, gosh, I guess I've been fortunate. I've liked every boss I've ever had and learned something from each one of them. I've had really positive people that, as clients that I've gotten to work with, that's true. They actually meant that. I can't think of a bad boss that I have. I guess I just have gotten lucky. I've had wonderful bosses. You know, sometimes people are a little bit difficult to deal with, but overall, it's never been a problem for me. And usually what that means when somebody says that is that they're just a good, balanced, well-adjusted person with a good, positive outlook. And so that plays out pretty well. People say things like that if it's, you know, generally authentic. You know, here's another one. The thing I hate most about my job, firing people. You know, sometimes it's necessary, but it never gets easier for me. Right? Who doesn't like firing people? One client I had said, oh, I love firing people. And the client was an engineer. So, of course, you know, I have engineers in my family. I know you. You're an engineer. Well, the people I fired really deserved it. I go, okay. Don't say that in an interview, please. But so that's, there's some general questions. So let's talk about behavioral-based interview questions. And I don't have time to get too into this, but here's some basics that are really important points that is really going to help you. You want to answer in the CAR format, you know, challenge, action, result. And try to give, I'd say, 1 to 3 minute answers. 2 minutes is probably good. You're in the safe zone. For people that are in leadership positions, it's a good idea to provide only enough detail to keep your interviewer asking questions and engaged. So, for example, you're talking about an accomplishment, and you say, I drove revenue $5 million by reorganizing our sales department. And then the interviewer says, well, that's interesting. Please tell me, what steps did you take to do that? And then maybe you say, well, I took 5 steps over a 90-day period. They were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. She says, wow, that's really fascinating. Well, tell me about the first 3 steps in greater detail, if you don't mind, please. So you're engaging, and they're looking for that. They're also looking for body language. So you want to feel comfortable. You want to understand the dress code. You want to dress appropriately. And here's something that is very interesting. Traditional companies and progressive companies are going to be looking, obviously, for two different things in the interviews. Now, I'm speaking in broad generalities right now, so please forgive me, because it isn't true for everything. But hopefully you can take this and apply it, and it will help you overall. So a more traditional company is probably looking for somebody who can work in a system, that is a little bit more structured in their approach, whereas a dynamic company that's growing, that is sort of, you know, pulsating, and they want ideas, and, you know, they're probably going to be looking a little bit more at how much of a thinker is this person? How do they feel about expressing their opinion to their supervisors? They actually want people that are thinking on their feet and saying, well, have you thought about this, this, and this? So just know that the more progressive companies, they might be looking for you to how comfortable you feel expressing your opinion. And if you have this conversation, just make sure that then you end with, but once the decision is made, I get behind my supervisor and I support them, or I get behind the decision and support it. In a behavioral-based interview question like, well, what do you do when you've disagreed with your boss? Tell me about a time where you've disagreed with your boss. A very good answer to something like that is to say, well, first I make sure that we're comparing apples to apples. I find most times it's a miscommunication versus a disagreement. That's a pretty impressive answer. Or you say, if there's a disagreement, I first make sure we're both working with the same data. And then I try to figure it out. Because we're all, you know, in any management position and above, you're probably all making decisions based on limited data. Tell me about a big win. Tell me about something you could have done better. Your main success story can also be your story about your area for improvement or the area where you could have done better. So let's say that you give your success story and then they ask you about, you know, an area for improvement. You can use that success story and say, well, I have to go back to XYZ story. Although I achieved success with that program, what I learned was this. I could have made $5 million more if I had done this sooner, better, faster, or if I had known blankety blank. Okay. All right. I forgot a question. Why do you want this job? Why should we hire you? That's always one that seems to upset people. It's actually one of the easiest questions to answer. So the answer that I like is, well, as I understand it, you're looking for someone who can blank, and that this gives you the opportunity to repeat back to them what they have shared with you. If I'm having a client conflict on the phone, something that I always try to do to make sure that they know that I'm listening is I say, okay, as I understand it, what you're saying is you're not comfortable with A, B, and C. And then you say, yes. Okay. All right. So here's what we're going to do. And so they understand that I'm listening. So this is the same type of a situation. So as I understand it, you're looking for A, B, and C. Not only can I offer that, or not only would I excel in that role, if you don't mind me saying, but I also hope you don't mind me saying I really want this job, or I'm super excited about this position, or I really see myself working here. I really like your corporate culture, your product, your awards for your green, sustainable, da-da-da, whatever it is. Tell them, I want this job. I'm excited about this position. Everybody that calls me, if I'm truly excited about their project, I say, I am excited about your project. I really hope we get a chance to work together. People want to know that we care, you know. It's a basic human, it just creates that thing that, and we want someone we could trust that's telling us, I'm excited about working with you. I'm excited about working here. I want this job. I had a lady, she was a wonderful lady. She had a lot of moxie, and she was very smart, and she was a high-powered lawyer up in Manhattan. She was getting married, moving to Pennsylvania. She didn't want to be a lawyer anymore in a law firm. She wanted to do, well, we went through all the things that she could do. We eventually just determined that she wanted to be a risk manager in a healthcare setting like assisted living facility or hospital would be a perfect role for her. So she started getting informational interviews. A couple of those turned into an offer, and she was just so thrilled about working for this one company. It was an assisted living facility. It was a developer that developed these assisted living facilities. She was going to be their primary risk manager for all their different facilities. And so she got the job. She had been up against two or three other women that were already risk managers in big hospitals and local in that area. And the one of the partners sat down on her one of the days in her first week and said, I just thought you might be interested to know, do you want to know why you got this job? And she said, well, I'm assuming it was because of my this and that and this and that, but please, you know, enlighten me. He said, because when we narrowed it down to the last three people, you were the only one that said, I'm excited and I want that you wanted the job, and that was the tipping point for us. We are a tight culture. We want people that really want to be here. Now, the backstory to that is that, you know, she's from Manhattan, tough lawyer. When we were doing interview coaching, and I told her, tell them you're excited about the position. She started laughing. She said, oh, I'm not going to say that. I said, you're not going to say that. She said, no, we don't say that where I'm from. We just don't say stuff like that. So I really had to push her and encourage her and explain why. And, oh, she didn't want to do it. But she called me afterwards and said, based on our history, I just had to tell you what just happened. So it is interesting how those things can play out and really be a very meaningful ovation at the end of the interview. Okay, I want to tie this up by talking about money. You can add money to your offers by doing several different things. I'm going to share those with you now. The first thing is by communicating your excitement throughout the interview process. By never getting defensive. And don't worry, because this is all in the notes that I'm going to give you, so you don't have to be writing down every word I say if you're taking notes. So by selling the value of who you can be to them through your stories, your metrics-driven results, your quantifiable achievements. By giving a wide range when asked about money and doing your best to never commit to a figure they can peg you to, I'll get back to that in a second, and by understanding how to negotiate your offer and never discussing salary or benefits until you have the offer in hand. It's one thing to say this. I've known throughout the years that it's a little bit harder to stick to that, because when you're talking to your interviewer in these interviews and you're really wanting to please, you're excited, you think you might get the job, there's the electricity in the air, and they're asking you questions. Very hard to not answer But negotiating the points of the offer is something that is very common before they give you the offer. But I have very, very rarely, if ever, I can't remember a time off the top of my head, see this play out in my client's favor. Because if they are negotiating the offer points with you before they give you the offer, they are using it as a tool to screen you out, not get you on board. So that's a very important thing to remember. When they're asking you money questions on first interviews, you know, we know they're not asking us because they're ready to hire us. They're asking us because it's based on what they say, we're either going to come in too high, too low, so it's a screening tool. So diverting an answer or giving a wide range are the two best decisions that you can make for yourself. So let's talk about how to do that. First of all, we got to know where we stand. Some clients get a low salary and a big back end. Some of my clients get incremental increases as each year goes by. Some of my clients are making 100 when they should be making 175. Some of my clients are making a $500,000 and they're afraid that if they go for a different position that the amount that they get paid is going to kick them off, you know, out of the running. So everyone has their own special worry about, you know, their situation. So how we kind of smooth all that out is by factoring in our total compensation packages. So let's look at, like, let's say, for and 95% of the time this will solve everyone's problems. You look at the last 5 years and you say, all right, you know, 5 years ago I made 50 and then 3 years ago I was at 75 and today, you know, I'm at 95. And 5 years ago I had, let me add up all of my perks and things, you know, I had $15,000 worth of this. I got a company car. I got a big bonus based on personal performance, and it was a good year. And that 1 year, I'd made up close to $60,000 extra. And I get health and life and vacation. You just basically go through, factor all that in, and then try to put an approximate dollar figure to it. Add it all up. So really, all of us are, you know, we may make 50, but when you add everything in, maybe it's closer to 100. And it was 55 years ago, but today it's 95, and maybe $50,000 worth of bonuses on top of that. So now I'm between 50 and 150,000. I try to give a $50,000 range. And I know that because whenever you get into, and I'm not saying this is true for every position, but it's true for a lot of positions, when you get over $50,000 and you're in the high five and six and multi-six-figure positions, there is at minimum a $50,000 wiggle room range in those positions. I guarantee you, it's 50 to 100. So if you say you make 72.5, yes, they are going to offer you 76.5. But they might have been willing to pay 100. So don't ever give them a figure because, or they go, well, the person that we need is probably going to be closer to 135. This guy's not making enough money. But people, it's strange, you know, how, so the bottom line is you just don't want them to peg you to a figure and let them have that as some kind of a psychological benchmark that pegs you to a number that becomes part of their decision-making process. So let's say they say, well, can you tell us how much you make? And you say, well, I'm happy to talk about that with you, absolutely. But I was hoping that we might, you know, get a little further along in the interview first to make sure that, you know, it's a match. And is that okay? And you definitely always want to ask, is that okay? Because they, you know, you've offered not to answer their question. So by saying that, you're showing respect. And then if you're closer, you know, two or three interviews in and they really want to know, we need to know kind of where you need to be in all this, and you have to give them a range, say, absolutely, I understand. Well, for the last several years, you know, I've been in the low six figures. I've been north of six figures. In the last several years, I've been between 75 and 225, give or take the year, or 100 and 200, or I've been north of 200. Or I've been in the mid six figures. You see how this works? So you give them a wide range. And then you say, you always finish this statement out with, since we're talking about it, Did you have a range in mind budgeted for this position? Since we're talking about it, did you have a range in mind budgeted for this position? Now, if a recruiter is asking you these questions, recruiters are going to be a little bit more pushy because they don't have time. They want to take all the information back to their client company and go, all right, candidate A, his name is Joe, and he makes 120, and he's got 20 years of experience in blank, and da-da-da-da. Candidate B, her name's Sarah, and she makes 117, and that's why they do this. It's not really for any other reason than they're just trying to, they're trying to make you fit into what works best for them and what their client company expects from them. But you can still try this on them to a point. And, you know, they say, well, how much do you need or how much did you make last year? You could say, well, my salary's fluctuated for the last several years between 100 and 200,000, and since we're talking about it, or you can be a little bit more streamlined between that just because they're looking, they're going to be more aggressive for looking for an exact number because they just want to keep things moving fast. So you can say, well, for the last couple of years, I've been between 150 and 2, and since we're talking about it, do you have any open projects in mind? Do you have any open searches that fall in that range or that are in that basic range? So you can kind of divert them a little bit too. In a way, you know, these questions are taking leadership and control, and people will respect that. So it engenders trust. So these methods of the communication that I'm talking about engender trust. Let's talk about an offer. Now, let's say you're to the point where they have made you an offer. You want to, A, get the complete offer, and that means all the accoutrements, all the life insurance and bonuses and when the performance reviews are and who you're going to be answering to and all of these things. So you say you get the complete offer. When they're done, you say, thank you so much. I'm so excited about this offer, even if you're not. I'm so excited about this offer. I really see myself working there. I'm so excited to just take the next step. And I'd love a day or so to go over this, if that's okay with you, and then get back with you. So you don't want to say, talk to my husband, talk to my wife, think about it, like it's not good enough. I want to think about it. You know, that's kind of off-putting. So we say, I want a day to go over it, if that's okay, and get back with you. And then when you call them back or go meet them in person, you're going to start where you left off. Just want to reiterate, I'm very excited. I think this role is one of the most innovative. So excited. I see myself working here. I really love you and everything about you and all your company. Everything's great. And then you reaffirm your commitment, your enthusiasm to them. And then you say, everything about the offer is great, even if it's a terrible offer. Everything about the offer is great. There is no problem here. The starting salary is acceptable for sure. However, based on the level and the responsibility of the position, I was hoping for something closer to blank. And then you're going to be silent. You're going to pause, and you're going to wait for them to say something. And it's going to be tempting to overtalk here. But try not to speak first. And they're either going to say yes, or they're going to say no, or they're going to say I have to go ask. So if they say yes, then great. Now you can just go ahead and negotiate the other points of the offer that you wish to negotiate, be it signing bonus or vacation time or living expenses or whatever it is for you. But you always want to start with the salary because that's the most important. If they say no, you say it's no problem. And my clients that are let's say, for example, you know, if it's an offer that you absolutely can't live without, then at this point you have to ask yourself whether you're willing to take it or not. And really you should have made that decision before you got on the phone with them. So you need to know what you're going to say based on their reaction. So you could say, that's absolutely no problem. I'm still, you know, excited to come on board. There's a couple other points that I'd like to talk to you about. And then you can keep negotiating the rest of the terms. Or, if you want, you can say, that is absolutely no problem. I am still so enthusiastic and excited about this position. If you don't mind indulging me. May I pitch, you know, another idea to you on this? And they're going to say, yes, of course. You're going to say, well, what if there was a, let's say, a signing bonus of $25,000 and a performance review, let's say, in 6 months with a salary adjustment that was based on exceeding pre-outlined goals? Would that be something that would be a little bit more workable for you? I have had clients use that multiple times, get big signing bonuses, and then the company is in agreement. Because a lot of times they're looking for a way to make things happen. By the time they've made you the offer, they've committed. They want you on board. So they're willing to do more to try to get you. So at that point, you've got a little bit of power to, you know, pitch them some ideas. And the worst they could say is no, and then you say, okay, well, that's fine. I hope you don't fault me for asking. I totally understand. This is totally understandable. I've been in that situation myself. There's a couple other points I'd like to go over with you, and that's okay. And so then you just keep talking about negotiating whatever other points that you want to negotiate or not negotiate. The other thing they might say is, I have to go ask someone. Fantastic. You say, great, when can I expect to hear back from you, or when should I follow up? So again, it's the how are we leaving this type of thing. So you just don't want them to ever give excuse to leave you hanging. So I have found in my 17 years of helping people in different capacities with their interviewing and negotiating, that these are really the primary takeaways. There's all types of things that we can be discussing in interviews, but it seems to be the combination of understanding how to talk about money, and especially if you've made lower than you've liked, and maybe the salary range that you're going after is significantly higher. That's perfectly okay. I have clients get huge surges in income just by giving wide ranges. So, you know, if you say that you've been in the high five figures or the low six figures, but you really see, and, you know, there's nothing wrong with just tweaking that a little bit and saying, but I see myself really in the mid six figures for the level and responsibility of my position. You can do that. But these overall strategies will help to increase the interviews, the offers, the enthusiasm, the motivation for people making you an offer, and just it covers a little bit of why people are passed over for offers, and with some cited examples of things that I see on a weekly and monthly basis. So I'm hoping that you can take this, whatever your level is of, you know, executive level, and use it for your benefit in your upcoming interviews and offers. And I thank you so much for joining me on this Career Power Strategy Session call today. And be sure to look for the recording of this call and the attachments, because there's cheat sheets, there's notes, and there's phone scripts that I have provided for you to help you prepare for your upcoming interviews. Okay, thank you, everybody. Good night.